from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Why Anguilla's chief minister was forced to call fresh elections, bread and butter issues surfacing on Dominica's campaign trail, and a former government official wants the U.S. embargo on Cuba lifted. I'm Ken Richards, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The electorate in Anguilla are getting ready to go to the polls 1 year after they did so in elections Chief Minister Hubert Hughes has scheduled for the 10th of March. Given the problems within Mr. Hughes' cabinet, Wednesday's announcement came as no surprise in the valley and the rest of Anguilla. The 35-square-mile British territory has been in a political crisis since May of last year after then-Finance Minister Victor Banks resigned from the government of Chief Minister Hughes. The resignation came a mere 2 months after the 1999 March 4th poll. Wycliffe Richardson recalls that Mr. Banks said at the time that he was unhappy with the leadership style of the Chief Minister.
He eventually joined forces with the opposition Anguilla National Alliance, leaving Hughes' administration with only 3 of the 7 elected seats in the assembly. Mr. Hughes made several unsuccessful attempts to encourage at least one member of the opposition to join his administration. The British government also urged Mr. Hughes to work towards forming a majority government that enjoyed the confidence of the electorate. The opposition repeatedly charged that the government was a minority one and boycotted sittings of the assembly, forcing House Speaker Leroy Rogers to adjourn sessions, citing lack of a quorum. Mr. Hughes accused the Speaker of being political and eventually took his case to the High Court. The suits were dismissed Wednesday, dealing a severe blow to Mr. Hughes' efforts to continue in power until 2004. He immediately asked British Governor Robert Harris to dissolve Parliament. The opposition Anguilla National Alliance and the Anguilla Democratic Party have joined forces to contest the upcoming election. Banks, leader of the ADP, told BBC Caribbean Report they already have 4 candidates who dominate their constituencies and have very good chances of retaining their seats. He said although the parties were contesting the elections as a united front, the candidates will retain the same symbols as in the March 4, 1999 elections. Political observers here believe the election campaign leading up to the March 10th poll will be a grueling one, as the candidates seek to woo the support of the 7,000-plus registered voters. I'm Wycliffe Richardson for BBC Caribbean Report.
Chief Minister Hughes blames his unsuccessful legal action on a lack of advice from his Attorney General, and Mr. Hughes says he is determined to appeal the court's ruling that prompted him to call elections after less than a year in office since the last general election. I asked the Chief Minister why he decided to go to the polls at this time, 4 years ahead of schedule.
Because my inner cabinet, the ex officio members of my cabinet, campaign for the opposition and work against the government. I have the governor against me. I have the deputy governor against me. I have the attorney general against me. Why would I have the whole official ex officio establishment against me and continue to go along with this agony?
But couldn't you have done that when the impasse with Mr. Banks surfaced rather than tag along with a lame dog government for several months?
The fact is, our constitution is not a democratic document. It provides for 2 ex officio members to be in my cabinet. I have a cabinet of 5. The opposition is only 4.
But couldn't you have tried to resolve the matter a lot earlier?
No, I think it's a basic principle to see how far this colonial establishment can go. I am saying that senior officials in the Foreign Office ill-advise ministers of government, and the ministers do not listen to the elected representatives of the people in these islands.
What's the position with the coalition between your party and that of Mr. Banks? Are all levels of cooperation there out the window?
Mr. Banks' own partner, Mr. Edison Baird, who's Minister of Social Services, refused to go along with him. I said, I will not live for the next 5 years under the pressures that I had over the last 5 years with a man I could not control and have lost a significant business.
But what's going to happen? Is cooperation between his party and yours over completely?
Well, that has been over ever since he resigned from the government in early May 1999, 2 months after the last elections.
And what is Mr. Baird's position there in all
Mr.
of this?
Mr. Baird's position is that he has now been dismissed officially from Mr. Banks' party because he refused to leave the government. he will be contesting the elections with me.
Some of your critics might tend to say you keep on scapegoating the British government for what's happening internally, and it's time to make a proper assessment of the situation and move on from there.
I'm saying that Britain is responsible for the administration of Anguilla, and they have not been doing a very honorable job here. And if they would keep up with local politics and do their job on the principle that the ex officio members should support the government of the day and accept the results of the people at the polls, then obviously we wouldn't have this instability in Anguilla.
But couldn't the same be said about you, that you're responsible for Anguilla's administration, but you're always blaming somebody else?
No.
But you are chief minister. You need to get on with the business of running the country rather than quarreling with the British.
I do get on with the business of running the government, and our economy is stronger than it's ever been because of my initiatives.
Since that interview earlier today with Mr. Hughes, it's emerged that London may have had a hand in pushing the chief minister towards elections. In a letter to the Speaker of the House, Britain's Minister for Overseas Development, Baroness Patricia Scotland, indicated that she had written to the chief minister, suggesting that if the court ruled in favour of the Speaker, the best solution would be the holding of fresh elections immediately. Baroness Scotland said in a letter that the British government would be prepared to take action to ensure fresh elections had Chief Minister Hughes and the Speaker opted not to follow her recommendation. Over in Dominica, a public opinion poll has given the governing United Workers' Party a slight edge over the two opposition parties also contesting the January 31st general election. The poll, conducted by the Caribbean Opinion and Marketing Association, gives the UWP 35%, that's 39% of the popular vote, compared to 34.7% for the Dominica Labour Party. The Dominica Freedom Party, which lost power in the 1995 elections, is a distant third at 9%. Tomorrow is Nominations Day in Dominica, and it appears both the UWP and the DLP will field a full slate of 21 candidates. The DFP is likely to contest 15 seats, it's being disclosed. Asked newspaper editor Charles Harding whether the Edison James-led UWP is on track for a second consecutive term of office.
Yes, it would seem so, if one judges from the crowds. It seemed to be a two-way battle between the United Workers' Party and the Dominica Labour Party, one of the oldest of the political organizations in Dominica. They have been attracting very, very large crowds, and one of the things that I believe seemed to be in the Dominica Labour Party favor is that it has been able to attract quite a number of young candidates who can relate to and identify with the younger people who have made up about 40% of the registered electors in Dominica.
But do you get a sense from the governing party that they're worried at all about the DLP challenge?
I would think that any political party at this point in time must be worried about the challenge that is coming, even from the Freedom Party.
What are the issues in this election?
Judging from the mood on the ground, I do not believe there are any real major issues.
What about the economy? What about international airport?
The international airport is not really an issue, you know. The fact is that all three political parties in this country promised an international airport in their manifestos, in the previous election manifestos. Where the problem is coming from, as I can see it, is that papers, they say, relating to it have not been laid in Parliament. And there is complaint about the transparency, about the entire transaction. That is where a lot of the concern is about.
How much of an issue is the state of the economy going to be in this election?
The real issues are the bread and butter matters. Are Dominicans better off in 2000 than they were in 1995, 1996, 1997? Can they shop? Do they have housing, proper housing, adequate housing? Are they well fed? These are the real bread and butter issues.
Newspaper editor Charles Harding, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Caribbean travel industry representatives are to consider using Air Jamaica and Biwi as alternatives to American Airlines when they meet in Trinidad this weekend. Regional travel agents are to boycott American because it unilaterally cut their commissions by a third from 9 to 6%. Orrin Gordon has the details.
The agents are hopping mad about American's decision, which they say was communicated to them through an unsigned fax. They're refusing to have anything to do with the giant carrier. It means finding replacements into and out of Puerto Rico, a busy connection point from the U.S. They're hoping to get Biwi and Air Jamaica interested in the Puerto Rico routes. The night a spokeswoman for American Airlines in Puerto Rico, Minette Velez, told BBC Caribbean Report that the company has no further comment to make beyond its press statement outlining the move. It's a short, dry statement saying simply that the move takes effect from Saturday and it affects travel agents in South America and the Caribbean. American's parent company, AMR, has a ground handling facility in St. Lucia. Can the license somehow be taken away from AMR? That's something they'll be considering in Trinidad as well. What's not certain is whether the boycott by Caribbean agents will have any effect on an airline with annual sales of $19 billion and profits of more than $1.25 billion. Even before this, travel agents and agencies were being undercut by internet bookings. American Airlines is a subject of an antitrust lawsuit by the U.S. government, which charges them with predatory pricing in their key Dallas-Fort Worth market and accuses them of going against the essence of free market competition. The company can argue that this has nothing to do with its fight with Caribbean agents, but it does provide some clues about its robust corporate strategy. In a reply to that lawsuit posted on its website, AA called it an ill-considered attempt to pick winners and losers in the marketplace. They say they compete vigorously but fairly, and tellingly for Caribbean travel industry officials, they say they always try to recover their costs.
Orin Gordon, a Haitian woman whose young children were sent back to Haiti, has been freed from a Miami detention center. The children were sent home while she was held in a U.S. hospital after she and 400 other illegal immigrants were intercepted in a smuggler's boat near Florida on New Year's Day. She'll now be granted a full political asylum hearing, as Leslie Goff reports.
Although Haitian Americans are happy that Evina Rinville may now be allowed to stay in the United States and be reunited with her children, who were sent back to Haiti with 407 other refugees, many say the U.S. government, which rarely grants political asylum hearings to Haitians, are doing so in this case only to deflect criticism that Cubans receive preferential treatment under U.S. law. Former U.S. Attorney General Ramsey Clark, who served in both the Kennedy and Johnson administrations, says the Elion Gonzalez case is an insult to Haitians and to all other immigrants.
Well, Haitians have always been discriminated against. When their bodies wash up on our shores, we're offended. Far from taking them in and refusing to let them leave, we don't let them in at all. But Elion Gonzalez is being treated differently than everybody.
Demanding equal treatment under U.S. immigration law, hundreds of Haitian Americans marched through Miami's Little Haiti district on Wednesday night on their way to a rally outside the city's Immigration and Naturalization Service. Gary Pierre-Pierre is the editor of the expatriate newspaper, The Haitian Times.
We are a newer group, we are a lesser group, and we are not as rich as the Cubans. We'll never be like the Cubans because of, again, like I mentioned, of the resources that the Cubans have.
As for the case of the Haitian mother separated from her children, under U.S. immigration policy, if asylum is granted, Evina Rinville can apply for permission to bring her children to the United States. But that process could take months or even years. For BBC Caribbean Report, this is Leslie Goff in New York.
A former secretary in the Reagan administration has called on Washington to lift the 38-year-old economic embargo against Cuba. The announcement came during a high-level visit by representatives of U.S. farm businesses and organizations. As Emma Joseph reports, this latest development is part of the growing chorus of Republican voices who think that the blockade should be lifted.
If the United States could lift the embargo and trade with communist-ruled Vietnam, then why can't it trade with Cuba? That's a question that the former U.S. Agriculture Secretary John Block is asking of Washington. Mr. Block, who served under Republican President Ronald Reagan, told reporters during a visit to the island that he believes the U.S. should be trading with Cuba. He said that the Caribbean island, which is just 90 miles away from Florida, represented a potential market of $1 billion a year. The former Agriculture Secretary went even further by suggesting that he signed trade agreements with Russia when it was the evil empire. Given that there has been a thawing in relations between the Clinton and Castro administration, the trip could not have come at a more delicate time. It went ahead in spite of the ongoing custody battle over the Cuban shipwreck survivor Elian Gonzalez. The delegation stayed well clear of the dispute, which has severely strained relations between the old adversaries Havana and Washington. The visit by a high-level delegation of executives and agribusiness companies is just the latest in an increasing number of fact-finding teams that are heading to Cuba to explore sales opportunities. The 15-member mission was led by John Costello, the president of the Citizens Network for Foreign Affairs in America. He stressed the need to take advantage of future changes in Cuba and changes in U.S. policy towards the island, a move which Mr. Block hopes will go some way in opening the door to Havana just a little bit more.
That's Caribbean Report. Join us from 11:05 tomorrow for our next morning programs. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.